Well, I am here as a representative of Indian Creek Foundation, but you know, it starts out I'm a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, but there's no inconsistency in that. 50 years ago at Indian Creek Foundation, there was a father who had a son with needs, and he was looking around, how can I find a place for my Down syndrome child to be able to live a good life and to make sure that there's safety and care and loving support around him. And they couldn't find anywhere, you know, those institutions, the Penn Foundation, the Penn Arts existed, and people were institutionalized. And that's not the answer. Isolating people isn't the answer. And what happened was, from that vision, Indian Creek came to be. Today, they serve over 1,300 people. Can you imagine that I get to be the pastor to 1,300 people? I remember I was sitting in my easy chair, and I said, well, God, I guess it's time for me to retire. I just finished my last pastor. He said, oh, no. He said, no, that's not how this works. He says, I have another job for you. And sure enough, I applied because I saw it and said, well, God, this must be one of those things you want me to do. And he chose me. But before that, God chose me. I have a wonderful dad who's now home with the Lord. And he had a wonderful easy chair. And that easy chair, he put every grandchild he had in it right beside him. And he hugged them. He gave them candy, of course, like every good grandfather who, you know, is sort of disobeying the rules of the parent. And he hugged on them. He loved on them. He said, you know what? He says, you're my favorite. He started out with one, which was our first child. And as he lived his life, he had 49 grandchildren. And guess what? At every point in that chair, those grandchildren sat. And you know what he said to them? As he gave them candy and loved on them, he says, you're my favorite. There was a big banquet celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. And they let me speak because at the time I was a preacher. So they thought that preachers can talk all the time. Half the time they never stopped talking. And so I got up there and I said, would the favorite of, his name was James, please stand up? Guess who stood up? 49 of them stood up. I have an announcement to tell you today. You're the favorite. You say, oh, I don't know if that can that be true? No, no, no. Just like Dad loved every one of them individually because of the nature of who they were and what he saw potentially in them, God sees in you. You're the favorite. You say, well, how can that be? Remember that verse I messed up? That one is really Psalms 139:14, and that wasn't the first mistake I've ever made in my life, by the way. There's lots of them. But it says, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. You're the favorite. How can these things be? Well, remember when God made man, he breathed into him the breath of life. A part of himself was put into every one of us. Now, you know, Adam messed up and certainly put some things in us that didn't belong there. But you know what? When the prodigal went off and got in all kind of trouble and blew all the resources God had given to the prodigal, what happened? The father was standing there waiting for him to come back. Guess what? The prodigal was God's favorite. Doesn't matter where you're at in life, you're God's favorite. And those 1,300 people who I serve, whether they're children, with parents that are struggling, trying to figure out how they're supposed to care for that child and get all those needs met, or whether it's, it's just unbelievable the gift that people have there at Indian Creek Foundation. I go into that day program, and there is so much wisdom. And you say, well, they have intellectual disabilities. No, no, no. They answer the questions about God that are so true. Jesus came upon a man who was blind, and the disciples go, okay, who sinned here? Somebody must have messed up. Who did it? Who messed up? Jesus said, nope, wasn't the parents. Don't blame yourself. We blame ourselves for everything our children do, right? He said, nope, not the parents. Not even the person. This is manifested so that the glory of God might be revealed. You're God's favorite. You're not perfect. And we all know it. But God loves us so much. He said, I didn't come into the world to condemn the world. He said, I came into the world that the world might be saved. Can you do something to help others? Well, yeah. Can you imagine it? So somebody said, well, what do you need over there at Indian Creek? And I'm gonna let Lydia come up and share a heart of a ministry that she has and the love for the people she serves. I want her to come up and share. She's the minister here. She's the one with the gifts. It says, heroes work here outside our door. But you see, she's more than a hero. She's called by God to transform lives. And Lydia, you come up here. You're the messenger. You have the gift. That's her husband, Mike, there.
All right. Well, thank you all for having me today. First, I want to say that this being here today in your sanctuary is actually a huge deal for me because I have stepped away from the church. And I've slowly been finding that God is calling me back. And that is a big deal for me. I'm a preacher's kid. I grew up in the church. I've had a lot of church experiences and been around a lot of different church communities, and they have not always been a good experience. And in my adult life, I told myself I would never sit through another church service, and I haven't until today. So I just want to say that this is a really big deal for me, and I want to thank you because I feel so safe and comforted in this space. And I didn't know that was possible. And I remember talking to Jim. He gave me this opportunity. And, the person in me that wants to serve Indian Creek, you know, had an automatic yes for him. And then as the weeks went on, I started to feel more anxiety about it because I was concerned about what I had gotten myself into. And there was this process of prayer and self-reflection that had to take place, and this understanding coming to me that that God is asking me to show up. He's wanting to bring healing back into my life, and so this is just as important for me, actually, as it is for the people that we serve at Indian Creek and also for the folks in this room. So I just want to thank you for letting me be here and giving me this opportunity to continue to grow in my relationship with God and with Christ. The program that I oversee at Indian Creek is called Peer Support. It is a mental health service. Indian Creek actually has three stools that we sort of sit on. We have mental health services, we have residential services, and then we have day programming services. And so I operate within the mental health, behavioral health services at Indian Creek. And peer support is I like to call it like a for us, by us service. It's for people who are in recovery from mental health conditions, who have learned to live well with their symptoms, and who may be in recovery from substance use. And they're coming alongside someone else that is wanting to work towards greater recovery in their own life. Sometimes when people think about the intellectually and developmentally disabled community, they're not always thinking about the fact that everyone struggles with mental health of some kind. They're not necessarily thinking about the immense trauma backgrounds that are impacting that population. And so mental health services are something that is broadly overlooked for that community. Indian Creek is one of the only service providers that provides mental health care to this community. So I'm very proud to be a part of what is a very important space for the IDD community. I myself am in recovery from trauma background, some anxiety challenges, post-traumatic stress, and substance use disorders related to alcohol consumption. Sober 5 years. So I'm very proud of that. I've been with Indian Creek for 17 years. I started there when I was just a bambino, just a little kid. I was about 22 years old. I'm now almost 40. So it's been a long time. And I really wasn't sure what I was going to talk about today, but one thing that's coming to mind is my first experience at Indian Creek. I've been spirit-led, mission-led all my life. I grew up that way. My family has always been rooted in its ministry through in a variety of different types of ways, aside from just, you know, being the traditional PK. That comes, all of the things that come along with that. But I found myself wanting to be connected to this community for some reason at a very young age, not really knowing why. I think I've always been othered in my life. I've been othered, you know, growing up in school. I've never been fully accepted in spaces that I've occupied. And so I think I felt like this really deep, innate connection with the IDD community. When I moved back to Pennsylvania, I was looking for a job. I applied at all kinds of different places, and Indian Creek was one of them. I was actually offered several jobs before I actually decided to work with Indian Creek, but something about walking into their programming space lit a spark of passion in me that I didn't feel in those other spaces. And they took me down on the first, you know, course of interviews. They took me down to go meet the people that I would be working with. And I remember them opening this heavy metal door and walking into the program space. And I immediately felt a cringe of fear and anxiety. I think sometimes when the spirit calls us into something, there's an initial response of, no, 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 not me, not today, not this person. I'm not right for this situation. I felt the heaviness, the greatness, the magnitude of what it means to actually serve and be of service to another human person. And it flashed in me like in a second. And I remember wanting to flee the situation because I was looking at a room of 6 individuals who I would be working with and responsible for, and I felt I'm too young, too immature, I'm just a 22-year-old person, I don't know how to do this job. And in the same moment, a person, the oldest person at Indian Creek, she's 87, she's been with Indian Creek since its inception, 50 years, she was institutionalized. She was coming out of Pennhurst. She lived there since she was 14. And she saw me. She was in the back of the room. She turned around. She saw me. I think she saw the fear on my face. She came up. She linked her arm in mine. And she said, oh, you're here now. And immediately what the Spirit had called me in to do satiated my anxieties. Because he was speaking through her to me that I was in the right place at the right time in the right period of my life. And she brought out in me something I didn't know was there, this belief in myself that I never felt before. somehow I thought, maybe I can do this. And she's been in my care for the last 17 years. She's never really left my service. I've been in multiple roles at Indian Creek, and somehow she's always just kind of in whatever department or program I'm working in. And whenever I see her, she wants me to tell her the story of how we met. Because the story of how we met changed my life. She wants me to remind her and tell her of how she changed my life. She manifested in me something I didn't know was possible for myself. And I do a lot of things for this person, but it's nothing compared to what she's done for me. She's taught me throughout my life, throughout the last 17 years, so much about my recovery through her own resilience, her own story, her own passion, her own drive to continue to move through her own mental health and wellness, her own skill development when it comes to work, when it comes to relationships. She's taught me how to love deeper, how to love better, how to love more fully, how to accept myself, things about myself that I thought I would never accept. She has transformed my life. I was reading on your website, somewhere in there on the missions page, about how the fruit of the Spirit is given to every person. And the fruit of this woman's spirit in that moment, this discernment that she had to see in me something I couldn't see in myself, was pretty amazing. And my hope for my role as a peer support, as a person who's in recovery, who's coming alongside others who are trying to find wellness and peace in their own life and live up to their fullest potential, is to bring what she brought to me, to step into those spaces, to validate people's experiences, to support them and walk with them through the process of their recovery. And I can say that I feel that we do that very successfully in the peer program. We serve 18 people in the program right now. We're hoping to grow. We have internships that we have people from the community who are interested in becoming credentialed as a peer specialist coming in to receive some training and support with that. And what's happening is that the staff who are coming into those programs, I as the supervisor get to see them be transformed. I get to see it. There's a staff person, she's unfortunately not, she lives in Delaware, so she's not able to be here with me today, otherwise I would have brought her along. But when I first met her, she couldn't speak. The trauma in her life had robbed her of her voice, and her voice box would spasm and shut down. And when I did my first interview with her, it was in writing because she couldn't tell me or respond to the questions. And then I did a second interview with her, and it was also in writing. It was 2 weeks later. I thought, well, maybe in 2 weeks she'll have her voice back. And she didn't. And every person that, you know, I met her at a job fair, so every other organization that was there just completely wrote her off. They didn't think, oh, she can't talk, so how is she going to do peer support? It's a talking job. And in my mind, I thought, this makes her uniquely qualified to be here at Indian Creek. She understands the impact of disability. She understands the social and stigmatizing effect of disability, the disabling effects of disability, because she experiences it. And I'm proud to say that over the 7 years of her being in my program, she's slowly gotten that voice back and has not had periods of time where she didn't have her voice for 7 years. Not seven, I'm sorry, 3 years. So there's been a good length of time where she's not had that experience, and I think it's because the walls of Indian Creek are a safe place for her. Indian Creek is operating under a ministry. Peer support operates under a very similar ministry. I'd say it's very similar to the Christian ministry. When CPSs are going through to get their initial training, the first pathway to recovery is acknowledged as love. We must love each other first before we can move into a recovery space with somebody. They need to feel loved and cherished by us. And then the next step is hope, the belief that one can be redeemed, that we're redeemable. Those are the two primary principles of peer support that get applied into every service that we're providing. throughout the time that we're working with folks. And it shows up in all these wonderful and amazing and intricate ways that are so, you couldn't predict it. There's lots of stories that my staff and I have experienced within the scope of our work that have brought us closer to our relationship with Christ, that have brought individuals closer to their relationship with Christ. In fact, it's not odd for someone to say, walk past our programming space and hear gospel music coming out, because that might be something that is helping another individual to feel better, to be soothed in their life. There are times that I might go to someone's house and I'll be singing praise music with that person, and the whole service is just praise music, because that is the thing that matters most to them in their recovery. And there are times when we've brought other people in connection with the church, people that have wanted church communities but not been able to have church communities be accessible to them, and we're supporting them in getting connected to those communities. Peer support and the ministry of Indian Creek are walking in lockstep, and it's something that we're very passionate about. We feel very good about what we're doing, and we want to continue partnering with community members so that we can be assisting our peers and the folks served all throughout Indian Creek in organically connecting with their community, which is one of the reasons why I'm here today, is that there are people here with talents, with gifts, with attributes, with connections, with relationships that could uniquely benefit the individual served in my community, the community that I identify with. And I want to bring you to them, and I want to bring them to you. I'll be around after the service. If the Lord is placing it upon your heart to do something and you're not sure what it is, allow me to link arms with you, because you're here now.
If you can imagine it, it's needed.
That's right. There are lots of ways to contribute. So, whether it's your time, your energy, your expertise in something, we can probably figure out somewhere to put you. That's all I got to say. Unless there's questions, then I'm happy to answer any questions.
Would you like me to close?
Well, I would like to know my question.
Okay, yeah, well, I'll stand too, and you can ask either one of us.
I think you got a hug first. Some people that are here.
Yeah, thank you for sharing.
I know that you have, you rent homes in the community, right? So how many homes would you have in the community?
Correct.
Where would those people, those, do you call them clients, friends? Where would those people be if you didn't have, provide those homes for those people to live in?
I'm telling you, you may know better than they. There's 29 homes that are all over the communities in Bucks and also Montgomery County. Those are the homes that are basically managed by Indian Creek Foundation. We're a nonprofit, so they typically are owned by Indian Creek Foundation to provide security into the future, and we try to call them by their name mostly, but residence is sometimes the words we use. But in those homes, and it is their home, and they'll tell you that, are loving staff people. Some like Lydia, there's not too many like Lydia, but some like Lydia, but people who care about the people that they're serving, and they're serving them. So.
To answer your second part, where would they be if those homes didn't exist? Those homes existed because of the deinstitutionalization movement. So they wouldn't exist, right? So those folks would be living in poverty. They might be living in homelessness. In fact, we've had peers, we've had individuals come to us who were homeless and needing a place to live because they got connected to some sort of social supports. The woman that I was just speaking about, she was homeless before she came to Indian Creek and was connected to Indian Creek by her church community. Places like Indian Creek, and there are more than one, right? There's, in fact, I'd say Montgomery County actually has the largest number of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities in the state. And then in the state, Pennsylvania has the largest number. And that's because, A, Pennhurst was a huge institution, and there were lots of little Pennhursts all around this area. The reason why this is a hub is because Pennhurst is not that far from here. So when folks were deinstitutionalized, they had nowhere to go. and the social supports were not already present. So you have places like Indian Creek that cropped up because those social supports were not there. But there are a number of other providers in the area too. But to answer your question from a, I think like a just a like more wider standpoint, is that if Indian Creek didn't exist, I don't know where they would be.
And then I understand that you have a program for autistic children or young adults, or
So we have some after school programs that are for young folks. We have a program that's for young folks from first to sixth grade, and then we have like middle school or grade, and then we had a high school after school program, and that's all for folks with autism. And then we have some wraparound services, like in-home services for kids who are a little bit younger. We have people that go into the school district that are supporting teachers and stuff within the school system to make sure that their IEPs, that's their education plans are set up or curtailed in a way that are going to really meet their needs and to support them with it, managing any challenging experiences they might be having in the school setting.
And the school district has worked with
you? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Is there anyone else that would like to ask?
I'm just wondering, is there a requirements to be part of the program as a resident? And is there a waiting list for residents?
It varies. There's waiting lists for pretty much every program because the need is so high. And the staffing shortages are present. We're talking about the healthcare field. So there's not a lot of retention is difficult. The pay is not great. So it's difficult to staff the programs, and that's why there's wait lists. My program has a wait list. I think I have 9 people on the wait list. Some of them have been on the wait list for more than 3 years. And because it's hard to keep people in the actual roles, I'm happy to say that most of my staff have been here for more than a year, so I'm able to begin to grow. But a lot of folks sort of leave or they transition into different roles. There are a lot of entry-level type jobs. So if you're going to school for something, you're not necessarily going to stay in a direct care role for very long.
Yeah, historically there's been waiting lists and continue to be waiting lists. As parents begin to age out, they start looking for solutions, and you know, it's not like something you can do overnight. You usually have to find your way into the system and sort of work your way through all the details that the state does in terms of, you know, putting you in a licensed home, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Every year kids are graduating from high school. They're moving into the adult system.
Yeah.
Indian Creek is primarily operating within the adult system. And it's just a lot of folks to serve. And like I said, this is a hub. So there's a lot of folks with disabilities in this area because the services are good. But it's hard to keep up with the pace of it all.
I'm a special ed teacher, so I'm very familiar with this. And I'm familiar with Indian Creek. I'm familiar with the law and all that. Until a child is 21, 18 or 21, they get supported in the school district or the school that fits their need. This is for the education of the congregation more so than you guys. So they get all their funding. Everything is paid for, taken care of, for the most part. When they turn 21, then the Office of, he changed the name, Office of Vocational Rehabilitation takes over. But the child or the adult has to be in that system, and again, there's a waiting list for that. Because I've been in the system for a while, because I've known people, I've talked and said, listen, when your child turns 14, start looking
start early.
Rehab, so that you can go on that list, so by the time they turn 21, there'll be services there for you, because otherwise the services won't be there.
Right.
Because after they turn 21, adults don't get the same services. It's not a mandate. There's not a law that says you have to provide that service. That's just more informational. I'm not trying to steal your thunder.
No, you're fine. You're absolutely fine. You are correct.
Yeah, that's true.
Parents really do have to get integrated into the services earlier on because there is a wait list. And there's not really a lot of good education out there for parents around that. even how to navigate it. It's very complicated and it's tedious. It takes a lot of time. And if you don't know how to do it or you don't know who to talk to, it's really, really hard to navigate and get entry point into that service. And school systems, I think, have to take a greater leap to start those things a little bit sooner on parents' behalf. And I'll say that if a kid is after that 21 age, they still receive funding services all the way up to the age of 24, I think. So they're not necessarily without support, but
it is to disappear, though.
Yeah. When the state gets involved, it can get a little slow at times.
Share a story.
Okay. I was working with Malmark and working at their Helping Hands camp in Pennsburg. It feels like 100 years ago, but maybe 30, 40 years ago. And we were working with Pennhurst clients. Now they were placing them back out in the streets. And so who was left in the, of the Pennhurst clients were people that couldn't be placed. And so I was really nervous. I was used to working with children and the Down syndrome population, and they were getting off the bus, and your friend came up and said, "Oh, I'm so glad you're here." My friend, who stood over 6 foot tall, she was a young woman, she was over 6 foot tall. My friend got off the bus and started running. And I said, "Well, where's my client?" And they went, "Well, there she goes." And I was running, thinking, "Lord, what am I doing? What am I doing?" Chasing her down, and she was just as scared as I was. And it was just precious to catch her and to calmly chat with her and to bring her back to camp. I don't know where she went. I don't know what her life has been. But what an amazing story. What an amazing story.
Yeah.
So if you would like to close.
Okay. Jesus, we thank you for this body of Christ. We thank you, Lord, for the beautiful prayers they pray. Lord, for the scriptures that they share. The love, Lord, they share with each other through the blessing jars. God, these are your people. Pour out upon them, Lord, great prosperity. Pour out upon them, Lord, greater opportunities. Bring people, Lord, that they can hear the message that's being shared here and the love that's here. God, we just ask that you put your hands and arms around Pastor Beth and love her and strengthen her and, Lord, make her voice to be heard throughout the community. And Jesus, for all these things you do, we're going to give you the praise. In his name we pray.